Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, there's been an awful lot happening on the international stage over the last number of hours. The Italian Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, rolled into the White House for a warm meeting with Donald Trump. Meanwhile, behind the scenes in Paris, top US and European officials, along with Ukraine, were deep in talks about a possible path to peace. Just this morning, the US Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, said a deal needed to be done in a matter of days. If not, he said, America would just move on. Well, joining me now is Dr. Patrick Bury, who is defence and security expert at the University of Bath and former NATO analyst. And in a moment, we'll speak to Stephen Erlanger, who is chief diplomatic correspondent in Europe for the New York Times. Patrick, good morning to you. Those talks in Paris, first of all, Marco Rubio and Steve Witkoff, the White House envoy, meeting with British, French, German and Ukrainian officials. But it seems from what Marco Rubio has said in the last hour or so that the Americans are running out of patience here.
Well, we don't know patience with who exactly, Claire. My hunch is, if you look at the context and roll this back a little bit, we've seen Russia, first of all, commit to the Black Sea Maritime Deal. And then second, after we thought they had a deal, started to introduce a whole load of new demands about sanctions relief. So basically effectively killed the deal. And we've seen them pounding Ukrainian cities, you know, in a way that for a while had basically tapered off. And they're massing for a spring offensive in the Sumy region, which is opposite the Kursk salient, which the Ukrainians seized and have now lost. So the mood music there, and as a result of this, Trump was basically saying last week, I'm getting annoyed, he made it clear he was annoyed with President Putin. You've seen Witkoff go over twice, not really come out of it. My hunch is this is an attempt yesterday by the Europeans to garner some support and reestablish a connection with the Americans. And this context today from Rubio may indicate that they are, and I think it does, they're running out of patience with the Russians. And he said in a matter of days it may be. The negotiations may be over. So take it all together. There's also been the trade, rare earth trade deal looks to be signed on Thursday with the Ukrainians. It looks like the US is starting to shift its orbit away a bit from Russia, which is quite interesting. And we might be ending the end of a period of trying to end the war quickly.
Stephen, what's your view on all of that, given what Marco Rubio has said? What do you think it means?
Well, nobody really wants a ceasefire except Donald Trump. That's really part of the problem. Russia doesn't want one. Putin doesn't want one. The Ukrainians want one, but they want a decent one. And 30 days doesn't really answer anybody's questions. So the big issue to me is if Trump gets fed up, because he tends to do this. He was going to do a deal with North Korea, and then in the end it proved to be too difficult and ended up walking away. The big question is what happens to Ukraine if Trump does walk away. Will the U.S. keep its military aid and financial aid at the same level? Will it be less? Will he suddenly say to the Europeans, you guys handle it? The Europeans have been talking quite a lot about how to do that. But I think Rubio is trying to do a sort of Trump bargaining thing. I'm not sure it's going to work with Putin, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm. And this news then on the deal, which is all part of this as well, this memorandum now that seems to have been agreed, paving the way for the minerals deal, the rare earth deals, and the suggestion that it could be signed as soon as next Thursday. I see in the last little while it's been confirmed that the Ukrainian Prime Minister will go to Washington next week. How do you think that is being received in Ukraine? Because we know, Stephen, there was considerable resistance to it when it was first brought up.
Well, there was, the first brought up by Zelensky himself, but then the Trump people kind of kept pushing drafts that were worse and worse. The problem is we don't know what this one says. I mean, it's been negotiated, and I'm sure the Ukrainians have made it a bit fair to themselves. But I mean, clearly they're still trying to make sure they're on the side of Trump. They need American aid. And maybe this will help. That was Zelensky's idea in the first place. But we really don't know what it says. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Patrick, we know that President Zelensky had been hoping to leverage this deal for a US security guarantee. That doesn't seem to be part of it from what we know.
No, it doesn't. From the reports and the earlier drafts that have been leaked or released, you know, that's what it looked like. There wasn't anything about security in there in terms of the US. I mean, the mood music is obviously Europe is stepping up. You've had the sort of dual track, one of the NATO ministers meeting and pledging more long and short term military aid to Ukraine. The US taking a back step now in that, a back seat, as it were. I think the one that's interesting here and where things may start to... collate around essentially, is the idea of the European Reassurance Force, that if this war is just going to go on, if Trump loses interest, but if there's continued US military aid just at a lower level, and Europe stepping up, what happens with this reassurance force and the planning that's going into that, probably about a force that might go into Western Ukraine, if there is no ceasefire? Mm-hmm. Can it go in? Can a reassurance force of European powers go into Western Ukraine and essentially put a bubble over Western Ukraine and say, if you attack us, that would be war now because we're in here, whatever about NATO, whatever about Article 5, and act as a deterrence force? I wonder, is that something that's potentially possible? And again, with some limited US support for that potentially.
We're a long way, though, Stephen. I don't know whether you would agree from that reaching a consensus point in Europe.
Yes, I think we're quite a long way. It's very much of a hypothetical. Even, you know, when Macron and Starmer talk about it, they talk about it as a post-settlement reassurance force. So they've downgraded what they intended it to be to begin with. If it sits in Western Ukraine just sitting there, I'm not sure what use it's going to be. And if the war is still going on, no one's going to send troops. That's the whole point. I mean, NATO countries don't want to have troops inside Ukraine in the middle of a war that hasn't stopped, that it doesn't at least have a ceasefire. So I think right now it feels very, very hypothetical, though I think it's very, very good for the Europeans to be working on options for post-settlement security assurances. I think guarantees is one of these words we should be very careful about, because the only real guarantee that counts is Article 5, and Ukraine's not going to have that.
Stephen, Giorgia Meloni, the Italian Prime Minister, is really growing in importance. She was in the White House in the last number of hours, zipping back then to meet J.D. Vance on Italian soil. She is becoming the bridge, isn't she, between the White House and Europe?
Sort of bridge, yeah. I mean, basically the Trump people don't like the European Union because the European Union has power. And its power is collective. So basically, it wants to divide the EU, much like China does. It wants to do deals with different countries. Now, Meloni, I think, has played it really, really well. I mean, Trump likes her. She gets on with him. She's very polite in public. She's full of praise. And she did bring messages from the European Union. There's no question. But Maroš Šefčovič, who's the trade negotiator, just spent hours there on Monday trying to talk about a free trade deal, some kind of reduction of tariffs, and got nowhere. So this is the problem. And Ursula von der Leyen can't get an appointment with Trump. Trump isn't really dealing with EU people. He prefers to deal with individual country leaders that he's fond of.
Mm-hmm. But then he did say, didn't he, Patrick, that there 100% will be a trade deal with the EU. He said that in the last couple of hours when Giorgia Meloni was there. So it's difficult to know which way the wind is blowing with him.
Yeah, well, it's always the last person he spoke to, it appears, isn't it? And he tries something and then pivots if he hits resistance too much. I think that's the thing. It's very unstable. I mean, if you're talking about Article 5, there's questions about, although he has stated the US commitment to NATO, some of the actions and those underneath him, it seems like there's divisions in his administration between a kind of pro-NATO camp and an anti-NATO camp. It's all about credibility, you know, and militaries have to plan against the worst case, and they are now, and the European ones are like, well, we're going to have to plan against the US not being involved, which costs us more.
Patrick, thank you so much. Dr. Patrick Bury, and my thanks also to Stephen Erlang.